TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Technology and Globalization. Vision of a New Future, Victoria Tauli Corpus and Fritjof Capra. The teach-in on technology and globalization at Hunter College, New York, culminated in a festive session on alternatives. Victoria Tauli Corpus represents the indigenous perspective. Collective sharing, gift-giving, and respect for ancestors, our surrender to the magic and mystery of life. Fritjof Capra asks us to consider natural capitalism, hydrogen cars, solar panels, and ultralight new materials. John Cavanna from the Institute for Policy Studies opens the session by introducing Victoria Tauli Corpus.
We start with the person who's come the farthest distance, a woman who is known to many of you as one of the most dynamic leaders of the anti-corporate-led globalization movement and of the indigenous peoples movements around the world. She's an indigenous activist from the Cordillera region of the Philippines, a region that has been fighting colonialization, oppression, invasion for over 350 years. And when you know that, you understand better the activism of Vicky Corpus. A lot of her activism began in one of the greatest battles of all time against the World Bank, a battle to fight the Chico River Dam, which Vicky and others carried out in the Philippines over 20 years ago. She was the chairperson of the Cordillera People's Alliance, a coalition of indigenous peoples from her region, as well as the organizer of the Asian Indigenous Women's Network, and now she is the director of the Indigenous Peoples International Center for Policy, Research, and Education. It's a great pleasure to introduce Victoria Tauli Corpus.
I would just like to go a little bit into how I came into this movement and share with you some of the actions that we have been doing for us to be able to assert that our systems, that our indigenous systems and our indigenous cosmologies are still very much viable and are already the alternate, some of the alternatives that we should be supporting and building upon. My childhood was spent in my ancestral hometown where there was no electricity, and the only vehicles which we saw are two buses coming from the main city and arriving in the late afternoons. We raised our own food, our vegetables, our pigs, and our chickens, and Sunday was the only market day in our community where people from all the villages would come to trade and sell their wares and their extra products. And while we were raised as Christians, we participated in all our traditional festivals and rituals, such as those which start before the rice is planted, after when we harvest, during weddings and festivals. At an early age of 12, I had to go to Manila to study because I passed a scholarship exam. And being thrown in a totally different world where there was electricity, there were countless vehicles, where you need to buy everything, was a culture shock for me. But the greater culture shock was for me to hear what my classmates and teachers told me, that Igorots, that is us, our peoples, are backward peoples and savages, and I had to get into numerous fights because I can't agree with them that they are more civilized than we are, especially when I see much more poverty and violence in their society. Then when I became an activist in the early 70s, I understood why such discriminating mindsets continue to exist. I learned that our ancestors resisted Spanish colonization, and therefore they had to be portrayed as the head-hunting savages who will need to be civilized and Christianized. I also learned that the American colonizers had to bring our ancestors to be displayed at the St. Louis, Missouri Exposition here in the United States in the 1900s to justify the benevolent assimilation policy of President McKinley. As early as then, I was convinced that much of what we have as Igorots, whether this be in our culture, our economic systems or our cosmologies and justice systems should not be undermined or destroyed. The more I see how modern society evolves and the role that science and technology plays in this evolution, the more I am convinced that many of the wisdoms and knowledge of the indigenous peoples are right. I strongly believe that the continuing survival of humanity will largely depend on how diverse cultures, diverse systems, and biological diversity are allowed to flourish and exist side by side. What can indigenous peoples contribute in shaping the future world? And how can these contributions be made viable in an increasingly globalized and monoculturalized world? We are still looked upon either as backward peoples or as hopeless romantics who are not living in the real world, living in harmony with and revering nature, respecting the sacredness of life, respect of ancestors, collective sharing of work and burdens, and sharing of gifts from nature between peoples and between generations. These are still the basic principles which guide us in our daily lives. We are constantly awed and by the magic of the cosmos and the mystery of life. Our rituals, our worldviews and belief systems, and our stories affirm our surrender to this mystery and magic. These, however, were seen as obstacles to modernization and progress, and thus had to be ridiculed, suppressed, and denigrated as unscientific and backward. For us, the obsession of scientists to dissect the earth and life, fragment it to its smallest component, and re-engineer it is overkill. This may sound stupid and meaningless in the era of biotechnology and cyberspace. For us, territories or ancestral lands are most important. This is what determines our identity. This is where our ancestors walked and learned everything that they left us. This is where we have forged our relations with nature and created social bonds with each other. It is not any wonder, then, that many of the conflicts we are witnessing are competing claims between indigenous peoples who are asserting their rights over their territories and entities such as governments or corporations. These so-called ethnic conflicts basically revolve around territories and resources and the assertion of the rights of self-determination. It is no doubt that our resistance to colonization, assimilation and integration is the main reason why we have retained some of our indigenous sciences and technologies. Now, there is a growing recognition of the value of this indigenous knowledge for the world. It is said that the most serious problems staring at us are global warming, the loss of biological and cultural diversity, and the resurgence of infectious diseases and the death of antibiotics. The prophecies of some indigenous wise persons describe these problems in different terms. Indigenous knowledge on the treatment of diseases are now being sought because of the failures of modern medicine. The recognition that indigenous peoples manage their resources more sustainably than the others is gaining ground. Unfortunately, because we manage to protect and conserve some of the Earth's valuable resources, such as minerals and metals, water, biodiversity, these have become magnets for corporations and governments to reconquer our territories. The developments in genetic engineering and informatics and the harmonization of national and legal systems on intellectual property rights make the corporations arrogant and smug that indigenous knowledge will eventually end up with them. What are the challenges and strategies that we are pursuing to ensure that our indigenous ways of thinking and doing will not be obliterated? First, It should be recognized that our role in promoting sustainable development lies in our capacity to continue practicing our indigenous systems of production and maintaining the conditions for these production systems to flourish. This means allowing us to have control over our ancestral territories upon which these practices can survive, and not denigrating the cosmovision that underpins these practices. Number two, it is a matter of urgency that conflict situations in many indigenous peoples' territories be addressed by the governments and international community. The threats to the very existence of indigenous peoples, especially those who have populations in only in hundreds, are very serious. We are talking about the Uwa in Colombia, the Batwa in Burundi and Rwanda, and the shore peoples in Siberia, among others. And their appeal is for the international community to support their fight for survival. If the UN is not able to play its role in peace building, other mechanisms should be built to address these situations. One resolution is the creation of a high-level commission which will do a fact-finding mission on the impacts of Plan Colombia, the U.S. military program for Colombia, on indigenous peoples, not only in Colombia, but in the neighboring countries like Ecuador. We should call on the preparation of case studies, reviews, or assessments of how mainstream development has destroyed or distorted indigenous models of development. The assertion of indigenous people's rights of self-determination should be recognized and promoted not only by governments, but in the United Nations, but by the society at large. With or without the UN, indigenous peoples in all parts of the world are strongly asserting their right to self-determination. The recognition of this right by governments in the broader society is crucial in saving whatever is left of the cultural and biological diversity in the world today. In conclusion, I would just like to say that we have come a long way in asserting our identities and rights. We believe that the systems that we have managed to maintain are already alternatives by themselves. Whatever is lost is a loss for the whole world, not just for us indigenous peoples alone. Let us all do our share in saving the world's remaining diversities and build upon this. And I think all of us in this room are active participants in bringing this kind of change, and we are looking forward to that kind of solidarity between you and us indigenous peoples from the world. Thank you very much.
That was Victoria Tauli Corpus, indigenous activist from the Cordillera region in the Philippines. The next speaker is Fritjof Capra, introduced by John Cavanna.
We turn to a physicist turned master educator who wrote a bestseller called The Turning Point. He's the founding director of a center called the Center for Eco-Literacy, which is dedicated to promoting ecology and systems thinking in primary and secondary education. He's the author of other bestsellers, including The Tao of Physics and most recently The Web of Life. The title of his presentation is a modest thing for 15 minutes, The Challenge of the New Century. Please welcome Fritjof Capra.
I think all of us here agree that at least one of the great challenges of this new century will be to build and nurture sustainable communities, that is, social, cultural, and physical environments in which we can satisfy our needs and aspirations without diminishing the chances of future generations. Since its introduction in the early 1980s, the concept of sustainability has often been distorted, co-opted, and even trivialized by being used without the proper ecological context. So I think it is worthwhile to reflect for a minute what sustainability really means. What is sustained in a sustainable community is not economic growth or competitive advantage or development, what is sustained is the entire web of life on which our long-term survival depends. In other words, a sustainable community is designed in such a way that its ways of life, its business, its economy, its social structures, and physical structures, its technologies, and so on, do not interfere with nature's inherent ability to sustain life. That's what it's all about. Now, the first step in this endeavor, naturally, must be to understand how nature does it. And that's what we call to become ecologically literate. We need to understand the principles of organization that ecosystems have developed through billions of years of evolution to sustain life. And to do so, we must learn to think systemically in terms of connectedness, relationships, context, processes. When this systems thinking is applied to the study of the Earth household, which is the original meaning of ecology, we discover that the principles of organization of ecosystems are in fact the basic principles of organization of all living systems. If you wish, they are the basic patterns of life. For example, we observe that an ecosystem generates no waste, one species' waste being another species' food. That matter cycles continually through the web of life. That the energy driving these ecological cycles flows from the sun. That diversity increases resilience. That life from its beginning, more than 3 billion years ago, did not take over the planet by combat, but by cooperation, partnership, and networking. Now, the main task, then, will be to apply our ecological knowledge and systemic thinking to the fundamental redesign of our technologies and social institutions so as to bridge the current gap between human design and the ecologically sustainable systems of nature. Fortunately, this is already taking place. In recent years, as you know, there has been a burst of optimism about the dramatic rise of ecologically oriented design practices, all of which are now well documented. For example, in the Hawk and Lovins book, Natural Capitalism. Eco-design is a design process in which our human purposes are carefully meshed with the larger patterns and flows of the natural world. In other words, the eco-design principles reflect the principles of organization that nature has evolved to sustain the web of life. For example, the principle waste equals food means that all the products and materials manufactured by industry, as well as the wastes generated in the manufacturing process, must eventually provide nourishment for something new. A sustainable business organization would be embedded in an ecology of organizations in which the waste of any one organization would be a resource for another. Well, such ecological clusters of industries exist. They have recently been initiated in several parts of the world by an organization called ZERI, which stands for Zero Emissions Research Initiative. And you can find more information about these worldwide projects on their website, ZERI, Z-E-R-I, ZERI.org. In natural capitalism, you will find an amazing number of new ecological design strategies and technologies. They include, for example, hydrogen-powered cars with onboard electric generators that may become the power plants of the future. Buildings that make oxygen, solar power, and drinking water while you work in them. Roofs and windows that do double duty as collectors of solar electricity. ultra-light new materials that are stronger than steel, deprintable and reprintable papers and inks that reduce the use of fiber by up to 90%, cellulose plastics that are strong, reusable, and compostable, so that what you do with your cellulose package, once you have used it, you put it in the garden as fertilizer. Today, the obstacles that stand in the way of ecological sustainability are no longer conceptual nor technical. The obstacles lie in the values of our society, and in particular in the dominant corporate values. During the past three decades, the information technology revolution has given rise to a new type of global capitalism, as we all know, and this new capitalism is structured around networks of financial flows. Because of the ability of financial capital to relentlessly scan the entire planet for investment opportunities and to move from one option to another in a matter of seconds, the profit margins are generally much higher in the global financial markets than they are in most direct investments. And so profits from all sources ultimately converge into this meta-network of financial flows. In this electronically operated global casino, the financial flows do not follow any market logic. The markets are continually manipulated and transformed by computer-enacted investment strategies, subjective perceptions of influential analysts, political events in any part of the world, and perhaps most significantly, by unsuspected turbulences caused by the complex interactions of capital flows in this highly nonlinear network. The core processes of knowledge generation, economic productivity, political and military power, and media communication have been deeply transformed by information technology and are connected to global networks of wealth and power. Presence or absence in the network is a critical source of power. In these global networks of financial flows, money is almost entirely independent of production and services. And so labor has become disaggregated in its performance, fragmented in its organization, and divided in its collective action. And consequently, the rise of this global capitalism is intertwined with rising social inequality, polarization, and social exclusion, as we have often heard today. To conclude, as we move into the new century, we can observe two developments that will have major impacts on the well-being and ways of life of humanity. Both of these developments have to do with networks, and both involve radically new technologies. One of them is the rise of global capitalism and the network society. The other is the creation of sustainable communities involving eco-literacy and eco-design practices. Now, whereas global capitalism is concerned with electronic networks of financial and informational flows, eco-literacy and eco-design are concerned with ecological networks of energy and material flows. The goal of the global economy is to maximize the wealth and power of the elites in the network society. The goal of eco-design to maximize the sustainability of the web of life. Now, these two scenarios both involve complex networks and special advanced technologies. I want to emphasize that whatever paths to sustainability we choose, they will involve new technologies, because technology is an intrinsic and essential part of human nature. It is deeply rooted in the evolution of human consciousness. When human beings evolved from between 4 to 2 million years ago, what evolved in these great apes that began to go upright is the use of hands to make tools and to form signs to communicate, and out of that language, consciousness, and social relationships. So the history of technology is intimately tied in with the entire human evolution. So these two scenarios that we now face both involve new and sophisticated technologies, but the underlying values are radically different, and the two scenarios are currently on a collision course. The network society is destructive of local communities and thus inherently unsustainable. It is based on the central value of capitalism, money-making for the sake of making money, at the exclusion of all other values. However, human values can change. Human values are not natural laws. The same electronic networks of financial and informational flows could have other values built into them. The challenge of the 21st century will be to change the value system of this network society so as to make it compatible with human dignity and ecological sustainability. Thank you very much.
That was Fritjof Capra. He's a physicist and founding director of the Center for Eco-Literacy. Fritjof Capra is the author of several international bestsellers, including The Tao of Physics, The Turning Point, that was made into a very intriguing film, and most recently, The Web of Life. Victoria Tauli-Corpus and Fritjof Capra spoke on the vision of a new future at the teach-in on technology and globalization organized by the International Forum on Globalization in early 2001. They were recorded by the staff of Hunter College. Next week, you will hear from Paul Hawken and Satish Kumar. I hope you have a pen handy for more information. You can find links to the websites of the organizations mentioned today on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. You can get a copy of today's program on The Vision of a New Future with Victoria Tauli-Corpus and Fritjof Capra for $12. That includes shipping. This is also the conclusion of a 7-hour series on technology and globalization. You can get the complete set of 14 programs for $45. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gallardon. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.